couldn't get, I don't know what thoughts I got right now off the top of the head. I mean, first thing is that the sort of coordination and outreach for this leaves a lot to be desired.
Okay.
In the sense of A, heads, minor heads out here. But then secondly, on the optics of who's front and center, too many white people front and center, really orchestrating like what the sound looks like, what the rhythm looks like. It really took until Sis Shannon got out here for us to get that on track. But even then, there's just a lot to be desired in terms of like, how do we prepare, right, for noise demos? How do we prepare for prison strikes with, right, organizers across the city who are putting in work in different ways, right? So not just folks who are ready to come out for a noise demo, but folks who are doing like outreach via letter writing. Folks who do outreach, like just supporting families of affected folks. I mean, these are the things that is missing. From the like structure of the event itself. What's up?
Would you call this a challenge? Would you put out a challenge to our community out here, both in New York and elsewhere? Would you put that challenge out? We need to be out here, if not on the very front lines, that we need to be out here densely, you know, coordinatedly as regards the prison strike and prison issues generally?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I put this as a challenge to two different communities. One is a challenge to folks who identify as abolitionists, specifically white folks who identify as abolitionists, right, and anarchists perhaps even, to really think about, like, what is your history, right? If then abolitionist organizing, like, what is your position? Where are you supposed to be? What is the labor you need to be doing, and when and where does that happen, right? So it's not just when we're coming out to take over the streets. But there's everyday work to do in terms of mobilizing your folks to actually take a back seat in black, right, radical practice and in black liberation, which is what abolition is all about. So, I mean, that's one thing. On the second hand, it's like a challenge for our own communities of color, black and brown communities, specifically black communities, to think about, okay, well, how do we prepare for these moments? Like, when there is an attempt at building solidarity, right? We share in a firm understanding, a political practice, and ideologically, right, that the prisons are a form of captivity, they're extensions of enslavement, plantations, of slave ships, right? And they got to get the fuck out. Well, how do we build that solidarity in ways that aligns with our politics? So we have to be prepared for shit like this too. We can't walk up in here being surprised at all these white people. If we're here, we gotta be ready to move some people towards our politics and translate that into like continued political practice, as well as like getting out in these streets. But I'll never be a person to ask or castigate black and brown communities for not being out at white dominant spaces. Because that's a site of increased vulnerability to historic forms of violence, right, that we know white people carry in their bodies, in their philosophies, in their ways of engaging, and that even crosses folks who identify as abolitionists, right? So it's never a form of castigation, but if we're trying to do this work, we got to think strategically about how we can do it so that it benefits us and our people who are held as political prisoners, right, continuously, ongoing, right, who were apparently here to build forms of connection with, forms of kinship, right, to let them know that they are heard, right? We need to make sure that shit happens. So, I mean, those are a couple of thoughts on like what the challenge is. The challenge on the event like tonight itself is, you know, how do we actually have folks who are trained in security work to, again, like support black and brown folks who are in these spaces so that when folks are being harassed by, you know, people who might consider themselves allies or accomplices, even, you know, more strongly worded, that when they do commit violence, which they inevitably will, that we have folks who can intervene and can redirect and translate that into a form of political education. That did not happen today. I doubt that it was part of the outreach strategy to actually have folks who are not just security trained, but also healers in the space. You know, I brought my sage, and I didn't even feel comfortable bringing it out. There's too many white people. You know what I mean? That's not what this is for. There is no ethic or practice around like how do we actually set this space so that what we're doing isn't from a place of hurt, but from a place of power, right? with our people. And some of that's like, we gotta set the space right. You know? Yeah, so those are some thoughts.
Adobe.
I want to just quickly touch on two points locally, given what we are talking about. So very soon, in the next couple days, we've got coming up a backpack and other, you know, school supplies giveaway that is being hosted by one DJ Drewski. It's called the Back to School Backpack Giveaway. And that's coming up out here in the New York City area this coming Friday, August the 31st, from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. So look out for that. And then shortly thereafter, 2 days later, we've got the YB and JO Classic Basketball Game. That's coming up. That'll be at 4 p.m. And it's on Seward and Rosedale Avs. So that'll be a classic basketball game at 4 p.m., followed immediately by a cookout, 6 p.m. Free food and drinks, music and giveaways. But I just want to revisit what y'all brought through in that discussion, which was so much. But the focal points that came out to me were primarily the question of necessity as regards these political realities that you have addressed in y'all's responses just now, and then the question of attention, risk, and vulnerability.
I want to sort of pull a through line with your shout out for the back to school work, as well as the basketball tournament and the food, the drink, the being in space with community, the living, you know? Because this is a point of difference, right, between Black liberation led by Black folks and white folks who may articulate themselves as abolitionists, who may see, as Dan put it, mass incarceration as a human rights violation, an abuse that needs to be redressed and corrected. And that difference lies in like how we as Black people have to live that reality. It is a continued reality, right? To the point where we understand that, and we are invested in building political consciousness around how systems of carceral systems and policing, anti-Black policing, structure the fabric of our lives. And so we never just walk into a demonstration and leave. Right? It's never contained in that way. We understand how it impacts our housing. We understand and we try to build understanding around how it impacts the food we eat, where we live, our access to basic social services, opportunities. That definitely another way that folks put it, though it's not necessarily one that I'm invested in thinking too much about, given how colonial and anti-Black the idea of opportunity and mobility can be. But the point remains that, you know, what you just highlighted, I think also is one of those points of difference that we need to think about and then try to figure out, well, then what if the basketball tournament is not a place where we're inviting anarchists to hang out at, then what are the demands placed upon them, right? As they anticipate action and demonstrations and as they leave them, right? What are the unfolding sets of tasks that lay before them? Who's setting the terms for what that is, what that should be? And then I also want to add that when we're standing outside in D.C. and Dana, you're talking about, well, folks behind the wall, political prisoners, don't necessarily know, on the one hand, maybe how compromised the noise demonstration could be or was, and also how much struggle it also entails, right? It's also our duty to figure out that. That's our duty as folks who are outside to figure out. That's our responsibility, right? And so while I'm not invested personally in expending a whole bunch of labor towards mobilizing non-Black and specifically here white communities and white anarchists for politics that they stopped the raise of the coalition share, that doesn't help me really, even if I don't feel that way, it doesn't help me really get outside the bond. I was trying to figure out that if we are participating in a noise demonstration, then we too are responsible for what that looks like and what comes out of that, right?
Exactly. Because I even think that exercise, as you describe it, Amrit, as labor, is a derailment in of itself that our elders have learned and applied Sankofa and have already learned to no longer engage in it. And part of what our duty is to not condemn future generations to observe, discover, reconcile, and conclude things that were already observed, discovered, reconciled, and concluded in 1965, in 1999, in 2005, in 2014. I mean, so if you have to put a period on it for your personal self and even for your organization and say, we do not expend any labor in raising up any white-led organizations and understanding their privilege and positioning in society, and expending such labor is a derailment of our efforts. And if there's a period put on that, that makes it clear for any future organization, individual, coalition that is Black-led to understand their role and placement in the liberation movement. Because I think one of the more crafty things about white supremacy or the creation or maintenance of a white ethno state is to derail Black and brown people, indigenous people, with what I like to call the burden of unity, where we are spinning our wheels trying to create or ensure that we are promoting or maintaining or extending some type of cross-racial unity, which ends up being to our detriment because these white-led organizations, these white-led groups, they go back to their privileged life. They can survive arrest. They can survive those type of things. It may even be a phase for them. My organization, Y Accountability, has been an observation of folks just coming to voyeur, so to speak, on our Black liberation work. So I am in total agreement that we ain't got time for that. There will be no investments in that. And if white-led organization has the willingness and ability to, if I would use a term from behind the wall, step into the center, you gotta come correct or we don't have time. Because soon as the inkling of the power dynamics come out, you're getting shut down. And other organizations that have been around way longer than ours already have their policy in place. They don't even want to hear it. So, you know, that's something that we have to go back and evaluate and say, okay, are we going to follow the footsteps of our elders and apply Sankofa and act accordingly to what they've already observed, discovered, reconciled, and concluded? Or are we going to keep bumping our head against the wall? And I mean this as a larger movement at large on a national level. Are we going to keep bumping our proverbial heads trying to figure out what is already known? I know many of us are returning to the speeches and readings and writings of Malcolm X, James Baldwin, you know, Fannie Lou Hamer, Ella Baker. We're going back because these people had it already. They had it down. It's no reason for us to reinvent the wheel in that way. And even the discussion of whether or not we should be doing this or not is labor in itself. I mean, some brown folks have infiltrated white anarchist spaces, white organized spaces, and they don't even debate these things at all. They're convinced that whatever they're doing is the right thing to do, and their beliefs that they are in appropriate service to black and browns, even when they are told otherwise. And I just will digress for 10 seconds. That manifested in the meeting following the Rise and Resist action at the Statue of Liberty. When Rise and Resist was confronted with their white-dominated power dynamic BS by black women in the space following Patricia Okumu's ascent on top the Statue of Liberty, these black women in the space were dismissed or treated almost disrespectfully. And that information is available online at any time if people want to fact check me. That is a labor in of itself, stepping into these spaces and saying, oh, white man, you're wrong for what you're doing. That's a labor in of itself that I think at this juncture, why accountability, and it sounds like BYP 100 don't have time for.
And it really also speaks to, if you give me just 1 second,
of course,
how do you get, right, black and brown folks out to that demonstration? Look at the lineup. I mean, that itself is an indicator, right, for certain folks due to sort of the sort of pulling on knowledge across history and space, or across time and space, that they're not going to show up. Like you said, Preston Sankofa, they're like, I'm better to figure out what abolitionism will mean today outside of that context, right? Yeah, that's huge. I mean, absolute agreement with you on that. Absolute agreement on then having to also figure out, well, then, you know, are we ready to take stances? Well, we're going to refuse that kind of labor. I think that is still an open question. I'll tell you what, we show up at a noise demo, there's a bunch of white people there, and if we stay in, and we have to work through that somehow. We need to build up some sorts of strategies, I think, to figure out how to really not only contain the whiteness and the white supremacist sort of leanings that, right, white people always carry with them in their bodies, right, in their ways they take up space as descendants of the sort of master personality. And then figure out how do we contain that, and do we mobilize that in a contained fashion so that it reaches our ends, or it can be a step towards what we want, what we need, what we know is a historical necessity for black people, right? What we know is, as it goes, a mandate for black people at this time. Or do we refuse the whole arrangement itself?
That's existentialism right there, Amrit. Existentialism. Do we or do we not?
I'm good.
But what I will say is, let's think about it really, really simply. Bronxites for NYPD Accountability, affectionately known as Why Accountability, has been consistently in the streets for 4 years. The prominent, so-called prominent white anarchist groups that were out there didn't call me to say, hey, you coming to the noise demo? Who can you bring out? What other organizations do you coalition with in order for us to have a strong showing? It's not necessary in the world that they live in. It's just not necessary. When Why Accountability wants to perform a broader resistance action or do liberation work, your phone rings. There are organizations that we talk to. NYC shut it down, the Grand Central Crew. Phone will ring, right? People's Power Assemblies Queens, their phone will ring. People's Power Movement, their phone will ring. Take Back the Bronx, their phone will ring, okay? Prominent, consistent, radical activist organizations constantly working in coalition with each other, right? I didn't get a phone call from Metropolitan Anarchist Coordinating Council. My phone didn't ring. I don't know. But that's my point. That's my point. So then do we labor in explaining why they need to coalition or explain why their actions replicate the power dynamics that at the other side of their mouth they will claim to want to eradicate? I don't know. As opposed to what we do in the Stop the Raids Coalition is have direct outreach with affected Black and Brown communities, because I believe our labor is better served rising up our own people rather than trying to appeal with hat in hand to replications of our oppressor. Waste of time.
Sis Shannon, I'm so appreciative that you closed out the way that you did on this question of direct contact, direct connection with those that we are purporting to be in support of, to be in solidarity with, to be a part of. And in this instance, we're talking about those who are subject to and the most vulnerable to these so-called gang raids. And absolutely, I totally hear everything that y'all both just said. And certainly this question of some sort of Sankofa strategy, certainly this question of what is the hierarchy that is developing, that has been developed, that constantly emerges as regards the work that we're talking about here, and just continuing on with this discussion about how do we move forward? What do we need to do as abolitionists? And what does it mean to be an abolitionist? And what kind of abolitionist do we need to be in order to sustain the work that's needed to be done? So just to close out, because y'all have been extremely generous with y'all's minutes, either of you, whoever would like to start out, perhaps Amrit, you would like to start us out with the closing discussions, just next steps for yourself and for your organization. Where is BYP 100 here in New York City going from here in the near future? And ideally, we can, you know, link up with you again very soon.
No doubt. All on board for a second conversation, a follow-up conversation, right? You know, I want to say one thing about, respond a little bit to what you're both pulling on, which is the labor, right, of mobilizing and removing and mobilizing non-Black and specifically in this case, white anarchists, who may identify as abolitionists as well, for a Black liberation politic. I really want to just underscore how much that can get in the way of doing what is a sort of necessity as well. Or what I should say, what is a sort of necessity, which is to constantly engage, not just in political consciousness raising within and amongst ourselves as Black folks and within our community, but also like study and to offer space for us to rethink what we think we know, for us to look back and pull out some more gems from the treasure trove of Black radical tradition. I mean, all of that can be, you know, that's, I think, Shannon, what's at stake is all of that work, which
our predecessors, our ancestors have also had to do to get us to where we're at, right? Which is not just conscious raising, but also ourselves to sit back, and really think about what is the historical problem we're faced with? What is unique about it today that is different maybe from 20 years ago? What are the similarities? What are the strategies afforded to us? What are the sort of cracks that we can exploit? All of that can really get derailed if you get into a back and forth with white anarchists around, hey, you're replicating white supremacy in the ways that you show up in this space and in the ways that you organize. So I use that as a segue to, you know, towards what has BLP100 been up to, specifically around our campaign home, which is our campaign to implement exclusion across the city, which is particularly, it's a federal policy right around permanent exclusion, but particularly egregious in the implementation in New York City through NYCHA. We've been in the streets. We've just been out doing face-to-face social conscious raising, building awareness around what permanent exclusion is, what are the options that folks have, and how do we build power with each other to tear that structure down, right? Which produces so much, which is not just a part of mass incarceration, but also produces homelessness, is just another example of the ways that intimacies between Black people are interrupted and you know, disrupted on the regular. And so it's been a lot of looking toward communities we work with, specifically at this time, it's been working with folks in Marble Hill to really build out not just a political consciousness, to build up political consciousness and to build out a political program for ending permanent exclusion, but to also skill share with each other around strategies we have for not calling the police, strategies we have for attending to and resolving conflict without the ready-made tool of 911. So all of these things are also possible and also happening, even if at the noise demonstration there weren't a whole bunch of Black and brown folks. Right. The work is also ongoing in other areas, and we should also honor that. Yeah, that's what I'll say about BLP100 as of lately.
Great. For Brown Sex for NYPD accountability, the majority of our labor efforts are around Stop the Rape Coalition and continuing to outreach to our people around what the raids are and how families can protect themselves from becoming a victim of the criminal injustice system and the ethnic cleansing and genocide of NYCHA, with the militarized police state at the front lines of that effort, to the greedy, salivating chops of real estate developers that lobby and engage in quid pro quo politics in the state of New York, which would be a totally separate discussion and recording. So I'm thankful and grateful to have the opportunity for our voices to be heard on a platform, because there's so many voices that have been screaming from the soil, as I like to say, while the white ethno state has media domination. So that's one of our challenges. So we do the Stop the Raids Coalition work, which is very labor intensive, to try to meet all of the needs of the families as they have put out and articulated to us, as well as what we believe as activists is our responsibility to do around that issue. Why accountability also is one of the principal architects of the Swipe It Forward movement, which I have spoken on the mass media platform more than once, since May of 2016, why accountability in conjunction with Police Reform Organizing Project Coalition to End Broken Windows, New Yorkers Against Bratton, NYC shut it down, the Grand Central Crew, the former BLM NYC, BYP100, who's on the line with us, New York City Against Trump, so many grassroots organizations that were involved in bringing Black self-defense to the New York City subway system by swiping in folks that are in need, because no one should go to jail for not having 275. So that is our institutionalized resistance action against racist predatory policing by the murderous NYPD in the New York City transit system. And it's critically important for me to describe the NYPD as murderous, because that's what they are. So we continue to build this institution and change the culture and behavior of everyday New Yorkers by encouraging them to swipe somebody in on their way out with their unlimited MetroCard. And if they are blessed to spare an extra $2.75 with their paper ride, please do so at least a couple times a week to help New Yorkers avert, circumvent, and subvert the body snatching system in the so-called United States against descendants of chattel slavery and those who present to be as such. So that is what Why Accountability is doing. And then the overall resistance action, Why Accountability, the ladies of Why Accountability, we are the turn up queens. So, you know, that's what we have going on in the constant quest to bring community education and political education to ourselves, because I need to say that also. Why Accountability is in constant motion to develop and redevelop our political acumen. We don't stop. We're looking to develop and grow and also share that with others, starting in our own homes and family and friends, and extend to our neighbors and extend to Africans at large. So that's how we roll. This is how we getting downs out here. So thank you again.